This conference will now be recorded.
We're very pleased you could join us for this rabbinic conference call on immigration, and pleased as well to coordinate this on behalf of the Central Conference of American Rabbis, the Rabbinical Assembly, and the Reconstructionist Rabbinical Association. I know this is a busy week as we all prepare for Passover, but as we think about our historical experience as strangers in Egypt, it also makes sense to hold this call at this timely moment. And as Congress delves deeply into the intricacies of immigration reform, this is the time for us to be considering this issue through our uniquely Jewish lens and thinking together about what we can do to lift this issue up in our congregations and communities. Before we get started, please note that though listeners' lines are muted, you can email questions to rac@rac.org. That's rac@rac.org, and I'll be happy to pose them to our speakers in the final section of this call. It's now my pleasure to introduce Rabbi David Saperstein. He's the director of the Religious Action Center and will help us begin to think about the Jewish historical experiences, traditions, and texts that can guide our understanding of this complex issue. David is familiar to many of you as the Reform Movement's longtime representative in D.C., bringing our priorities to Washington and Washington to our rabbis and congregations. And David, thanks for joining us. The call is yours.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes, go ahead.
Great. Okay. I'm really thrilled and delighted to be with everyone. I think as many people know, and we'll hear more about the Reform Movement is making a major priority on this issue with the different arms of the movement working together. I had the opportunity to do something similar in Long Beach, California, at our convention, so I'm going to handle it a little bit differently today. I think everyone on the call understands the religious mandate and the lessons from our tradition on this. The rule that permeates the Bible to love our neighbors, ourselves, to treat the stranger as ourselves, is a pervasive theme in the tradition. And who was the ger, the ger toshav? It wasn't someone just passing through for a day. Clearly what's being talked about is someone who came to Israel, lived there, worked, abided by the rules, but didn't convert, which is exactly the situation of undocumented immigrants in the United States, or new immigrants who have not become citizens yet. The vast, overwhelming majority of them are people who participate fully in our life here, pay taxes, obey the laws, but haven't converted yet. And the question of whether or not they're entitled to the same benefits as our citizenry, if we're going to take the moral lesson and example of our tradition, is quite compelling and quite clear. By the time of Talmud, this had evolved under the rule of Meidachei Shalom for the sake of the ways of peace in our community, to mandate that the social benefits of our society, where the Jews control the society, should be given equally to non-Jews who lived in our midst, as well as Jews who lived in our midst. So this is a pervasive theme that we encounter in the writings of the tradition. And in the medieval times, we dealt with some of the very realities that we have to deal with here about economic competition and what the impact would be under the rule of Cherem HaYishuv. The community had certain rights to restrict people who had come in to community under certain conditions, but never to block them altogether. The rabbis always reminding the communities of the need to find a fair and equitable way for people to participate. So this is not just in the abstract. In very detailed ways, the community had to grapple with many of the same problems that we have grappled with. And wherever in the Jewish tradition, in Jewish history, we found ourselves outside the land of Israel, we face many of the problems that immigrants around the globe face today. That is, we look for a country or a community who would give us safety and an opportunity to participate where we did, Joseph in Egypt, the Alexandria Egyptian community, the Babylonian community, the Spanish community, we flourished. With extraordinary success and opportunity, as few as those times were to participate in the general society as well. Clearly, the golden age of Spain under Abd al-Rahman, the Caliph of Cordoba, being the quintessential example. of that. And people today and just are simply pursuing the same opportunities that we, who have been the quintessential immigrant community, cast out of country after country, often banished, exiled, forced to flee by circumstance. We were always looking for a place that would give us a haven. If any place, if any community has an obligation, a moral obligation to be sensitive to the needs of immigrants today, it's clearly our own tradition. And that's certainly so with the experience here in the United States. When the gates were open to us, the floods of Jews were able to come in. They were given a degree of freedom and opportunity here in America unknown anywhere else. Many of them came under legal constraints. Many of them came on what today would be undocumented immigrants. And still, we found a place here, took root here, and have flourished with an extraordinary experience in Jewish history. So this is clearly something that that resonates with our history individually, resonates with our history in terms of our people, resonates with our values here. Just a word in conclusion, just about us and the Latino community here. You know, we clearly share so much in common. We're both diaspora communities seeking to keep ties with historic homelands, recent or ancient, and with peoples across the globe with whom we share commonalities with. We've both been victims of persecution and discrimination here in the United States and in other countries in which we have dwelt. We come from diverse communities all across the globe, seeking security, freedom, justice, economic opportunity. We share a great deal in common in terms of what brought us here and the experiences that we brought here in forging strong bonds between these two communities. It's an opportunity that you, who represent the synagogue community and the organizational communities across America, need to take an opportunity. If you look at the changing demographic patterns, clearly it is in our deepest self-interest, under, again, that rule of Medache Shalom, for us to forge close relations with the Latino community. And that starts with the fundamental rule of coalitional politics. If you want to have a friend, you've got to be a friend. We know what our survival issues are. Very much for the Latino community, the survival issue is immigration. And recognizing that and standing with them and beginning to deepen not just the dialogue, but the coalitional activity that and the social interaction that builds real trust, friendship, and understanding is absolutely vital to our interest today as it has been over the centuries. So with that, let me turn it over to back to you, Barbara.
Great. Thank you very much, David. Well, now that we've contextualized immigration in that Jewish framework, let's take a look at the current public policy issues being debated with an eye to how we might lift our own voices as only we can. And to guide us is Liza Lieberman, grassroots policy associate at the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. So many of us on this call have personal or familial ties to HIAS as immigrants ourselves or the children or grandchildren of immigrants. And Liza is a key member of HIAS's DC team, coordinating Jewish grassroots advocacy and mobilizing networks to promote rescue, reunion, and resettlement of Jewish and non-Jewish immigrants. So, Liza, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Barb, and Rabbi Saperstein, of course. Thank you for your wisdom, and thank you all for calling in. In terms of legislative background, as you all know, there was an election this last November. Following that election, it became pretty clear to most everyone paying attention that immigration reform would be a big issue in the new Congress. We've seen legislators from both sides of the aisle commit to fixing the broken immigration system through legislation that would address both enforcement measures as well as a pathway to citizenship for the estimated 11 million undocumented immigrants in the U.S. In January, a bipartisan group of senators released a framework for immigration legislation. And then this was since followed by a fact sheet released by the White House, and both groups are moving forward with putting together some legislation. The White House has indicated that if the Senate timing that they've laid out doesn't work out, that they will have a bill prepared. And then there's also some action on the House side of some key members from both sides of the aisle, again, who are looking to draft some legislation. So it's really exciting. I mean, we see the crux of this legislation as kind of a balance between the enforcement side and the citizen, the pathway to citizenship. So those two issues are really, it's clearly going to be at the forefront of the legislative debate. And then in the last few weeks and months, the House and Senate Judiciary Committees have been holding many hearings about immigration. I think there were like 6 hearings this week alone, which is crazy. Anyway, so these hearings have addressed themes such as enforcement laws, high-tech worker visas, reforms to the family immigration system, and our country's commitment to provide refuge to persecuted individuals. So just quickly to note that I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago in the Senate Judiciary Committee, there was an especially gratifying remark from new Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii, who we were very pleased to see. She cited examples. It was a hearing about the high-tech worker visa element of this bill, which there's been a lot of buzz about that. Understandably, I mean, there's a lot of discussion about how immigration reform would actually help the economy and how we should be welcoming in people like job creators. But Senator Hirono very interestingly cited examples such as the contributions of former highest client Sergey Brin of Google and Jerry Yang of Yahoo, who both came to this country not through high-tech visas, but through the family. Actually, Sergey Brin came through the refugee program as a son of refugees. So this really illustrated the importance of encouraging family immigration to this country so that people can, she said, dream the American, so that people who dream the American dream can also provide us with their talents and entrepreneurialism. So we feel that her comments served as a reminder that immigrants and their children who come to the U.S. to join family or enter as refugees fleeing persecution, strive for success and are responsible for some of the country's most innovative and job-creating businesses. So that's not exactly something we could plan for in our plans for the high-tech visa element of this bill. In terms of timing for the bill, we are hearing, and obviously all of this is subject to change and possibly likely to change, but we're hearing that the Senate will go first. The Senate bill will hopefully be introduced in mid-April. There's some buzz around some D.C. events going on April 10th, so that's kind of the date that we're hearing, that we're hoping the bill will actually be introduced around then. And then the Senate judiciary markups, and then hopefully the House will go next. They're hoping to have it go for a vote and hopefully forward on to passage before the August recess. That's something that I think the president is saying, if that happens, that's wonderful, but we're really committed to having it done this year. So that actually in... Also, moving on, there was a recent faith leader meeting with President Obama where he indicated that he wanted to make sure that this is done this year. And Hyatt represented the Jewish community at this meeting and talked about all the great work that you all are doing in your communities and that other communities around the country are doing. He specifically noted, he being Mark Hetfield, who's the new president and CEO of Hyatt, he specifically spoke to the president about the overlap of immigration and the upcoming Passover holiday, which I think many of you have been discussing, and it's obviously very relevant, the themes that Barb alluded to at the beginning of this call. So he actually specifically asked the president to make sure that when he thinks about the immigration issue, to think about Jews, the Jewish community really being at the forefront of this, which has been indicated by various Jewish organizations and communities being part of this debate. And of course, partially indicative of that, and we'll hear from Abby in a moment, is the Jewish Social Justice Roundtable's current campaign on immigration and immigrants. Another theme that came up in terms of the president's meeting, one of the reasons the president said that he called the meeting was to combat some of the noise that has been occurring in districts and that he foresees to happen during the upcoming Passover and Easter recess. Easter recess, but I've been calling it the Passover recess. So that starts next week. And then in terms of legislatively, the president indicated that he is less concerned about the pathway to citizenship being a strong part of the bill. I think that's hopefully going to be at the forefront and the crux of the bill. As I said, But some of the things that he's more concerned about are enforcement triggers, to kind of keep an eye out for that and see to make sure that we don't have arbitrary or unrealistic triggers to saying when the border is secure. Just a quick tangent, as Department of Homeland Security Secretary Napolitano often says, the border is now more secure than it has ever been. We have an unprecedented amount of resources at the border, and it's really, you know, how do you define when the border is secure? Is it when there are zero illegal entries? That's a big problem we're going to have to grapple with. And so some of these triggers are something to look out for in terms of legislation. And another thing to look out for is how we plan the future flows of legal immigrants coming to the U.S. Some of the other sub-issues that will very much be part of this discussion as we start to see and analyze the legislation, there will be detention reforms. Those are sure to be included or debated, at least. LGBT inclusions, provisions for same-sex couples to be able to bring their permanent partners through the U.S. To the U.S. Also, of course, refugee provisions, which HIAS is working very hard on to make sure that we fix some of the problems with the refugee and asylum systems as we're fixing the broader immigration system. Also, the family system and some integration provisions. So that's kind of the legislative framework. I look forward to hearing any questions that you have later on in the call. And also, I encourage you all to contact me if you'd like to be involved with HIAS's We Were Strangers 2 campaign, which the Religious Action Center is a very close partner, in addition to many other Jewish groups and denominations. So if you have any questions about that or would like to be added to the list, please do not hesitate to email me. My email address is Liza, L-I-Z-A, .Lieberman, L-I-E-B-E-R-M-A-N, at HIAS, H-I-A-S, .org. One of the things that we're working most closely on, urgently right now, is a sign-on letter that we're hoping to send before we all leave on Friday for the Passover holiday. We're going to be sending this to Congress and the White House with organizations, local organizations, national organizations, as well as community and faith leaders such as yourselves, saying that we really want immigration reform. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Liza. Well, now that we've set the Jewish and policy contexts, our next three speakers are going to share their own experiences that you'll hopefully find helpful as you think about ways you can engage on immigration issues in your own congregation and community. We're going to start with Abby Levine, and Abby is the director of the Jewish Social Justice Roundtable, which is a network of 26 Jewish organizations, including the URJ, the RA, the RRC, working to elevate social justice to the center of Jewish life and to advance an explicitly Jewish framework in the pursuit of social justice. Abby is an experienced organizer, including stints at the Progressive Jewish Alliance and in the labor movement, and we appreciate her joining us today. Abby, the call is yours.
Thank you so much, Barb, for having me on this call, and it's an honor to be part of this conversation. The Jewish Social Justice Roundtable, as Barb mentioned, is a network of 26 groups, almost 20 of whom have decided to work on immigration in some way this year, which is really exciting, and includes the RAC, the RA, the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College, and just congregations, as well as local and national groups. So I'm just going to lay out a couple of opportunities for future involvement and then offer some resources at the end of that. So there's two basic ways to act. I'm sure many of the folks on this call have experience doing this kind of work. You can either, one opportunity is to act within congregations. So that could look like speaking from the Bima on the issue of immigration, or inviting speakers to your synagogues to talk about the issue, or writing letters to the editor, to your local paper or Jewish paper, and finally to help generate letters and calls from your congregants to members of Congress. The second category is opportunities as part of a larger community. So along the lines of what David mentioned at the beginning, in partnership with immigrant rights groups locally. A lot of that work is happening right now around in-district meetings with members of Congress, and immigrant rights groups and Jewish organizations are in the midst of and are ramping up to do more of those meetings of members of Congress in district. And then the other piece as part of the larger community it would be public actions. So that could look like rallies, again, with local immigrant rights groups, or town hall meetings that get scheduled by members of Congress, and other things that will look different in different regions. So if you'd like to be connected with other immigrant rights groups in your city, or have questions about what other Jewish groups in your city or state might be doing, please email me. My email address is alevine, that's A-L-E-V-I-N-E, at jewishsocialjustice.org. And there's also a ton of resources coming out around Passover, which I know Liza will be posting on the We Were Strangers 2 website, which is wewerestrangers2.wordpress.com. So yeah, I look forward to your questions, and thank you for having me.
Great. Thank you, Abby. Before we go to our next speaker, remember that if you have questions for any of our speakers, you can email them to rac@rac.org. That's rac@rac.org. And we'll have time to respond to those at the end of the call. Our next speaker is Rabbi Marilee Gordon, who serves McHenry County Jewish Congregation in Illinois and has made social justice a core part of her rabbinate. She's affiliated with the Chicago Board of Rabbis, the Women's Rabbinic Network of Chicago, and the DeKalb County Partners for Justice, and she's been particularly engaged in work with the immigrant community. So, Marilee, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be a part of this conversation. For the last 4 years, I've been involved in hands-on work with detained immigrants who are housed in the McHenry County Jail about 2 miles from my home. I heard about that they were, the jail had rented out a wing to immigration, to ICE, to house detained immigrants, and that there was a visitation program, and so I became involved. The visitation program is through the Interfaith Committee for Detained Immigrants in Chicago, and through the leadership of two Sisters of Mercy, that would be Pat Murphy and Joanne Persh, a law was passed in the Illinois legislature which mandates the right and the opportunity for immigrant detainees to have religious visits. And what it looks like at McHenry County Jail is every Tuesday, a rotating group of volunteers, between 10 and 15 of us, go in and we meet with small groups face-to-face. It's not over the phone with video. We meet face-to-face with a group, and then about every 20 to 30 minutes, we switch and see another group. And on any given Tuesday, we'll see all the women. There's usually about 10 women here, and then we'll see about half the men, between 50 and 70 men. Now, the people that we see, some of them came here when they were 5 years old with their parents, and they never got papers. Some of their family members did, and then they got into trouble, and they served time in jail, and now they're up for deportation often to Mexico, and they've never been there since they were 5 years old. They don't know anyone there. Then we meet with people who came here were brought here straight from the airport. Immigration didn't like their visas, and so they are incarcerated until they can either plead their case. Sometimes they can be in the facility for 6 months, for a year. We see just a variety of people from all over the world. And besides being able to meet with them face-to-face, we're the only people that they see not wearing a uniform, treating them as a regular human being, hearing their concerns. We are able sometimes to contact family members they haven't been able to contact. For instance, there was a man who was, he was originally from Egypt, and he couldn't make calls to Egypt to his aged mother anymore. So we were able to make calls for him. And sometimes what happens is, since this is a regional program, there are people who were living in Kentucky, say, or the latest trend we've seen is in the last 2 weeks, we've seen several dozen people who were brought up from Texas. We really don't know why. Some of them said they were brought right from the border. Others were in jail there for a few days and then were brought up here. Now, there are visitation programs around the country in about 20 facilities. The problem with immigration detention is that it is farmed out to county jails and private prisons, and so there are over 200 facilities around the country that house immigrant detainees. There is a network of visitation programs, and its acronym is CIVIC, which stands for Community Initiatives for Visiting Immigrants in Confinement. And their web address is endisolation.org. They will help people connect with programs in their area to get involved. They'll also help groups start new visitation programs. For instance, I had been trying to work with a group in Kenosha to start a program there without much success, but now CIVIC is working with them, so hopefully there'll be a program there. The other thing that happens is that sometimes people are released. Many times people are deported, but sometimes the detainees are released into the community, and they may be far from home. They may be released in downtown Chicago, and they're released in January, and they had been detained in August. They don't have winter clothes. They need a bus ticket somewhere. They need to stay in Chicago, even though their family is in Kentucky, while their case continues. So the Interfaith Committee has started a post-release program. And there is at least one synagogue in Chicago that takes a rotation where every week a different group is on call for calls from people who have been released and need housing or need clothing or need a bus ticket or whatever it is that they need. So that's another way that people are able to get involved. So the need is great, not just on the legislative end, but also to help detainees and families of detainees to get what they need. So I encourage you to get involved through CIVIC. And if you have any questions, you can contact me. My email address is Marilee Gordon. That's spelled MARAELEEGORDON @gmail.com.
Thanks, Marilee. Appreciate it. Our last speaker is Rabbi Mark Diamond, who is the regional director of American Jewish Committee's Los Angeles office. And AJC has been a real leader on immigration issues. And as a former pulpit rabbi, Mark also has a wealth of organizational and congregational experience that he brings to bear, and has also been doing particularly exciting work on immigration issues. So, Mark, take it away.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on the call. Let me begin by sharing a recent experience I had last month leading a border immigration study tour. We brought to AJC Los Angeles, brought together 25 clergy, community leaders, judicatory officials representing six different faith communities in Southern California: Episcopalian, Jewish, Methodist, Roman Catholic, Presbyterian, and United Church of Christ. All of them are somehow affiliated with the Los Angeles Council of Religious Leaders. And together we spent 2 days in San Diego and Tijuana. It was an extraordinarily moving and emotional experience. We had briefings with immigration attorneys and activists, conversations with immigrants and those recently deported to Mexico, site visits along the U.S.-Mexico border, including a social welfare center, a shadow neighborhood in Tijuana, Chupancingo, that doesn't even show up on any maps. We were very moved by what we saw and heard. One of the stories that will always resonate with me is a young man who's not quite 30 years old, who we met near the border fence or wall. He was born in Mexico, came to Southern California as a baby, grew up in Los Angeles, educated in LA USD schools, married, two young children, picked up recently for driving without a license, picked up at his place of business where he's working, separated from his family and immediately deported and frankly just dumped in Tijuana. We met him at the border. He looked up at the border fence and confided to us that in the next couple of months he will make a break for the border, surely not in San Diego and Tijuana, which is very secure at the moment, but probably further east in either Texas or Arizona. And that story and many others resonates with us. We witnessed a lot of despair. We witnessed children in Chupancingo, this neighborhood in Tijuana, playing in toxic waste. We saw 12-year-old prostitutes walking the streets of Tijuana and heard very searing testimony about the problems of sex trafficking, the problems of that many people face at the border. We also saw some hope, and I want to stress that as well. We visited a remarkable social welfare center in Tijuana called Casa de los Pobres. It's run by a small group of Catholic nuns and volunteers. And last month they served 25,000 meals to the hungry and homeless, many of them recently deported to Tijuana. They have a full-fledged free medical clinic dispensing health care and prescriptions. It is a remarkable story of hope surrounded by, frankly, a community where there isn't much hope at the moment. And they really are a life-saving miracle for those they serve. Again, the experience was very important for us. As it turned out last night, AJC Los Angeles hosted Archbishop Jose Gomez, Archbishop of the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, which has over 5 million parishioners, if you will. And he spoke and I spoke about the issue of immigration reform. And I share this to stress that we have, as rabbis and Jewish activists, we have willing and able partners in the other faith communities who want to work with us, and we can and should establish common ground with them and work together for comprehensive bipartisan immigration reform. There is a strong feeling, I think, that this is the year we might be able to achieve something, and we have partners who will stand shoulder to shoulder with us on these issues. At the same time, I want to stress that I think we have a lot of education and advocacy to do within our own Jewish community. Certainly coming up to Pesach, it's a great opportunity to speak about this in synagogues and at Passover Sedarim. I've certainly found that in Los Angeles, while many people in AJC and in the Jewish community get this issue, frankly, there are others who are leaders in our community who feel it's not a Jewish issue, who feel that this is a different immigration experience than they went through. And we have to work hard with our own community, I think, to advocate for comprehensive immigration reform and tell the story. It's very important. I would also add there's some great resources available. And though I don't always tout AJC's materials, I must tell you that there's a wonderful resource available on our website. It's ajc.org/immigration. It is a comprehensive guide entitled Immigration Reform, a Jewish Issue. And we are hard at work in Los Angeles and throughout the country trying to get this in the hands of rabbis and Jewish leaders. You can certainly download it there, ajc.org/immigration. There is also a facilitator's guide for that, which is not available to the public. But if any colleagues are interested, I would ask you to contact my associate, Eli Lippman, who is with our Department of Regional Offices. He will be happy to send you a copy. You can reach him at Lippman, L-I-P-M-E-N-E, at ajc.org. And between the facilitator's guide and the immigration reform resource guide, you have just a wealth of material for sermons, for classes, Divrei Torah, and the like. It's very important. I'd close for now with the following plea. There are 11 million illegal immigrants in the United States, That's an awesome number. They're living in a shadow world, a shadow society with shadow jobs, shadow employment, driver's licenses. And that's a number that's hard for us to really comprehend. My request would be, and we heard this over and over again on our border study tour, please tell our stories. I think we have an enormous opportunity now at our Siddarim and our synagogues in coming weeks and months to tell the stories of the immigrant experience. I think we owe it to ourselves as Jews. We owe it to our brothers and sisters and other faith communities to share the stories of the immigrant experience. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it. So we're going to transition now to Q&A. And again, we have a few questions that have come in, but if you'd like to add yours to the bunch, it's rac@rac.org, rac@rac.org. So the first question, probably, Liza, for you. We got an email from a rabbi who said that his local police chief signs U visas, which fast-track victims of crimes who have cooperated with police. And the Immigration and Customs Enforcement told the police chief that he didn't have to sign those papers, which the rabbi suggests is actually contrary to the Obama administration's policy. So can anything be done about this, especially in an area where members of Congress may not be sympathetic to immigrant communities? And I think I would just broaden that a bit if you could speak to the issue of how do we work with local officials or national, federal, senators, representatives, who represent us but don't share our views on this.
Yeah, thank you. So I think that's a really interesting question. I might invite you to email me about this offline so we can talk about this specific case and get to the bottom of this because that is very upsetting. But just broadly, the Obama administration's policy that you're referring to is called prosecutorial discretion. And basically, President Obama has directed all ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers to only use enforcement on cases that are highest priority, so that actually would present a risk to society. That has played out differently in different communities, of course, as we all know, but that is the general policy that they are all supposed to follow. There has been a lot of discussion about whether that has really happened, especially in the context of the Secure Communities Program, which many of you are probably aware of. That is a program that it's basically trying to give more enforcement capabilities to the local law enforcement to carry out the federal immigration laws and federal immigration enforcement, which we find pretty problematic. And the We Were Strangers 2 campaign has some materials on that about how local policing is really not the place for carrying out immigration enforcement. There are stories about victims of domestic violence who are immigrants, who are then afraid to go to local police officers to report their cases of domestic violence, which is very problematic. I mean, I think some of the most incredible advocates for immigration reform are state and local police sheriffs, because they are the first to say, this is not our job. Immigration enforcement does not overlap very well with policing and community safety. So I think that's kind of the general theme of where this question was headed. I hope I answered the question a little bit, and I'd be happy to answer the specifics of this case offline if you'd like. And as a reminder, my email address is liza.lieberman@highest.org, and Barb can also put you in touch with me. Just one more note about working with those that might not share our perspectives on this issue and might not share all of the reasons that Rabbi Saperstein so eloquently laid out for us to be at the forefront of this debate. I think just one note is that we are at a time where, even though maybe my boss said the other day, there are a lot of people that are doing the right thing but possibly for the wrong reasons, which is kind of interesting and upsetting, but we're at this very unique moment where maybe for political reasons, maybe for moral reasons, maybe for religious reasons, we're looking towards a compromise on this issue. And that has really gotten together a wide array of allies and not really allies, but allies on this issue, if that makes sense, of groups and individuals from the faith community, the business community, law enforcement, absolutely, some moderate partners that we might not find ourselves aligning with on many other issues are really coming together at this unique time. So that I just wanted to throw that out there as well.
Great. Thanks, Liza. Marilee, a question for you. How did you make the initial connection to the group that you're working with?
I heard about it through a Latino coalition meeting, but this group, Civic, has a list of all the visitation programs. So they can help anyone find a visitation program near them if it exists, and or else get them involved with groups that are in formation. And again, that email address is endisolation.org.
And actually, this is Liza. I also wanted to share that the Detention Watch Network is another great resource. I believe they have information for a lot of the detention visitation programs as well. And a couple of years ago, the We Are Strangers 2 campaign, actually with Marilee's leadership, put together I think it was like a toolkit about Jewish visitation programs or Jewish involvement in detention visitation programs. So I'd be happy to circulate that. It's also available on the We Were Strangers 2 website, which again is www.wewerestrangers2.wordpress.com.
Thanks. Abby, are there ways for rabbis to plug into the roundtable?
Yes, definitely. So the primary ways are through the rabbinic organization, so just congregations, the rabbinical assembly, and the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College. Those are kind of the ongoing ways to plug in. And if there, and when moments come up, like, for example, around Passover, one way to plug in around moments like that is that what we've done around Passover is done some joint press work around the different immigration and workers' rights seders that have happened and are happening in this really 2-week period. There have been immigration seders in New York City, Boston, Chicago, the Twin Cities, Washington, D.C., Houston, and probably more. But when I know that those things are happening, I'm able to work to elevate that story of Jews across the country working on immigration, in this case around Passover, hopefully in the future around other particular moments. So please be in touch with me if there are big events or actions that your synagogue is doing, so that I can look for those commonalities across the country and raise them up in the media and elsewhere. And then lastly, what I'll say is that we are targeting we've chosen two particular congressional recesses, and asking everyone who's able to, Jewish leaders, Jewish organizations, to plan and implement in-district meetings or actions with your member of Congress. So those two congressional recesses that we've chosen are April 26th to May 3rd and May 24th to June 3rd. So if you think you'd be able to take action in those particular timeframes, let me know again so that we can raise up that story. And that can be anything from events in your synagogue to writing an op-ed to attending an in-district meeting with other members of the Jewish community or members of the immigrant rights movement.
Thanks, Abby. Liza, this one came in for you, but actually, if any of our speakers have any insight to this, that would be wonderful as well. And the question is, what makes this moment where there's this bubbling up of interest in immigration reform different from the previous times, like the, you know, in 2006, 2007, when we got very close?
I'm happy to address that. I think I hinted a little bit earlier at that. Maybe if some of the other speakers want to chime in, I'd be interested.
This is Mark. I would add that I think we're seeing a significant shift. I might say candidly, it's amazing what happens when a party loses an election. Mm-hmm. And certainly in Los Angeles recently, we hosted a board meeting devoted to the issue of immigration reform. And one of our speakers was Robert Gittleson, who is a conservative Republican who is actively at work with conservative Republican members of the Senate and the House on this very issue. He has very clear, practical business reasons for supporting comprehensive immigration reform. So I think we're beginning to see alliances that we didn't see even a year ago. Seeing a shift here on this issue for a host of reasons.
This is Marilee. I would agree with Mark that it has a lot to do with the Latino vote as being something desirable to attract.
Yeah, and this is Liza. I just wanted to add that in addition to politics, I think also the state of our economy right now has really, there have been numerous studies about the economic benefits of immigration, in addition to what I mentioned earlier about the hardworking work ethic of immigrants that, we've seen in our families and we've seen now with Latinos, I think that has really come to light in a big way. And there's some really interesting research coming out of a lot of DC-based and non-DC-based think tanks about that. I also think the DREAM Act movement has been really crucial. A lot of you have probably seen these in your communities. The DREAMers are undocumented students who came here by no fault of their own. They came here as minors, so their parents brought them here illegally. Many of them are star students in our universities and high schools. They could have left, for instance, they could have left Guatemala as a baby and may not even speak Spanish, may have no connection to their country of birth, and they fear deportation. They're at risk of deportation until very recently with the president's deferred action for childhood arrivals policy. So I think that movement has really pushed. They've been incredible with absolutely no resources, no political wisdom in the typical sense, but they've built an incredible movement that has really pushed the broader immigration reform movement in a huge way.
Thank you all. I'm actually going to combine three somewhat related questions now that we got. So the theme is the main focus of undocumented immigrants in this country has been on Latino immigrants. And how do racial and ethnic prejudices play into that? And so I guess relatedly, David touched on this a bit in his remarks, but unfortunately he had to jump off the call. So I'd be curious for any of our other speakers to talk about how this works as a tool for interfaith engagement and engagement with the Latino community in particular. Mark, perhaps you want to lead it off. Didn't mean to put you on the spot.
That's all right. No, actually, Dave and I are both, he's better than me. We're both at a national Latino-Jewish conversation here in D.C. He ran back to the room. I'll run back shortly. But again, as I said earlier, I think we have enormous opportunities, both in the interreligious relationships and our intergroup partnerships here. And I would just remind us, it's not just a Latino issue. Last year, I attended a very moving immigration mass at the cathedral in Los Angeles, overflow crowd, and the testimonials I heard and we heard were not just from Latino immigrants, but immigrants from Asia Pacific, from all over the world. So this is an issue that goes beyond the Latino population. And again, I think we have enormous opportunities. Our partners are ready and willing, and I would I'll share with you just a conversation I had at lunch before I got on this call that a Latino leader from Arlington, Virginia turned to me and said, thank you for what the Jewish community and AJC are doing. I want you to know how much we value and appreciate and need your support. It's important for us to know that you are with us, you feel this is a Jewish issue, and you're standing with us.
Anyone else want to jump in on that one?
This is Abby with the roundtable. I would just add that I think a really powerful tool is sharing stories. And I really enjoyed what Mark said about the stories that he heard at the border. And so I think for me, the moments of understanding and building relationships across faith and across other kinds of differences, those moments of understanding really happen when we're able to share stories. Like, for example, my grandfather, Irving, came here in 1924 with nothing, is not so different from immigrants of today. So I guess I would just lift that up as a way to engage in that work and hearing stories from today's immigrants about why and how they've come to this country.
Thanks. Well, that is actually all the questions that we had submitted. So I want to just close out the call and thank everyone for joining us for the last hour, especially our five speakers who have helped guide us and our thinking on this issue. And in the meantime, I wish you a joyous and meaningful Passover and look forward to all of us working together in the weeks and months to come on immigration reform, which, you know, is an issue that we all care so deeply about. So thank you again. Have a good afternoon.
Hey, man.